case for argument is United States against Oros. Mr. Weinberg.
May it please the Court.
Mr. Weinberg, you can raise the podium if you're on. No, don't touch the microphone. There's a switch on the right-hand side.
I'm fine, Judge.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge. Judge, we are here today appealing the conviction of Adrian Oros, who was convicted of bribery in the district court. And
He was convicted in the district court of bribery.
No.
Bribery in the district court would be a much more serious offense.
Not bribing the district court, Judge. That would be.
We know we sit in Chicago, but we'd like to feel here.
Right. I understand. Judge, the issue in this case has to do with some evidence that was presented to the jury in the form of summary phone charts. Specifically, we're talking about phone records and bank records. And the problem that we have with the way that these records were used, Your Honor, is that they were admitted into evidence without any foundation whatsoever. And we understand that witnesses and courts will admit evidence that summarize voluminous documents that would be unrealistic for juries to pore through. However, Judge, it is still the law in this district that a proper foundation must be laid. And in this case, there was no records keeper nor a certification specifically for phone records that were used to show a relationship between Adrian Oros and a city building inspector, Mr. Johnson. And we feel that those phone records were not...
Counsel, the district court decided this in the end adversely to you in her ruling on the ground that a proper objection had not been made. Well, I think you need to start there rather than just arguing the merits.
Certainly. Judge, a proper objection was made. The record shows that at the time when these records were being attempted to be introduced, we had objected to them, stating that certainly there was no certification for them and that there was no records keeper telling the jury that these records were business records exceptions to the hearsay rule. That objection was made in the district court. It was clear. It was outlined in our brief. And I feel that the district court, in overruling that objection, Judge, did not look at the rule, the self-authenticating rule 902, in deciding that this evidence would be admitted. So we feel that by admitting this evidence, Judge, Mr. Oros was prejudiced to the extent that these records showed voluminous phone calls between him and Inspector Johnson, and then furthermore showed Inspector Johnson making even further phone calls to another building inspector that he utilized to get certain transactions done. We feel, Judge, that without this evidence, Mr. Oros may have been acquitted of the entire offenses in this case. As you know, he was acquitted of the conspiracy, but we feel that the phone records in this case colored his transaction, his single bribe transaction when he was caught at the gas station with Mr. Johnson, in a much more sinister way than it actually was occurring at the time that the police arrived.
But what happened at the gas station, it's after midnight. He's meeting with the inspector. He exchanged $12,000 in cash in the front of Johnson's car. And then they look in the trunk, I think, and they're the architectural drawings. So, I mean, that's pretty serious evidence.
Well, certainly the fact that they're meeting in a gas station after hours would give rise to a...
And then we've got Johnson's testimony of why he was there.
We do have Johnson's testimony. We also have Mr. Oros, who told the officers at the time that he was using Mr. Johnson as an expediter, that he was paying him to expedite the plans that were then found in the vehicle. And also, Judge, we have Mr. Johnson actually kind of mincing words and telling the officers that he was doing expediting. And when questioned at trial whether or not he was an expediter, he said, "I was doing expediting." I submit that that's the same thing.
An expediter.
I'm sorry?
What is an expediter?
An expediter.
I understand in the shipping business what an expediter is. He's somebody who comes and picks up the goods and makes a rush delivery. What you seem to be describing as an expediter is a private bribe intermediary as opposed to a public bribe intermediary.
If I understand the question, an expediter in the city of Chicago, Your Honor, will assist those in the building trades in standing in line, speaking with other inspectors, organizing documentation, and submitting those things to the city in an effort to get those things done. Contractors and developers use them legitimately in order to move these plans through the system because, unfortunately, in the city of Chicago, it does take a lot of time and effort to do that. So some people feel that their time is better spent developing projects, and they hire people to do these things. It is not illegal. It is done all the time in this type of business, and that's what was going on here. The fact that this was happening in a gas station, at first glance, might seem that, you know, this might be a bribe, but in this case, Mr. Johnson had a side business, DTA Development, that he had always been doing while he was still a building inspector. It would make sense that Mr. Oros would believe that he could not make these arrangements with Mr. Johnson while he's working, so he would make them outside work hours. Furthermore, this was not Mr. Oros' transaction. He was doing this for Algin Construction. He was hired by his friend, Tio Scorte, in order to get those plans through the system. And so he was doing so according to how Mr. Johnson wanted him to do that. We also feel, Judge, that the district court erred in applying an increased guideline range to Mr. Oros when including relevant conduct, specifically acquitted conduct, specifically acquitted conduct, in applying that to Mr. Oros in increasing his guideline range 6 levels. That conduct was not proven by a preponderance of the evidence. It was not corroborated, and it certainly was used in order to prejudice Mr. Oros with the jury. It was certainly used in an effort to increase his guideline level incorrectly or improperly, Judge.
What is the problem as you see it? The judge believed Johnson, and I understand that it's quite standard in the law of evidence that a trier of fact can believe a convicted perjurer over the testimony of 20 bishops, or at least that's how it's always put in law school.
That is true, Judge.
Believed Johnson. Why is that forbidden?
However, in this case, Johnson's testimony was so incredible. He was so not forthright with not only the U.S. attorneys that he was dealing with, but with the jury in this case, that without any corroboration, his testimony certainly would not be enough to increase his guideline range by a preponderance of the evidence.
Counsel, did I understand you to say there didn't seem to be a problem with a building inspector working as an expediter as well?
No. What I'm saying is he was a building inspector, but he also had a side business called DTA Development. And as part of that business, it was Mr. Oros' belief that he did also expediting services.
So there's nothing wrong with being a building inspector and taking money to expedite?
According to my client, yes, he didn't think that anything was wrong with that.
He obviously wasn't going to be standing in line because he was supposed to be working for the city during business hours.
Right.
Standing in line occurs during business hours.
Well, it was Mr. Oros' impression that Mr. Johnson, who would then take the plans, had his own network of people that would then take care of the procedures and stand in line and do the necessary legwork that needed to be done to get these items through. If there are no more questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, Mr. Weinberg. Mr. Rotter.
May it please the Court, Stephen Rotter for the United States. The District Court did not abuse its discretion in admitting the summary charts. More importantly, any error was harmless. It's well established that the trial court has broad discretion in ascertaining the admissibility of business records. The District Court's denial of the post-trial motion for new trial, it took notice that the underlying documents the phone and business records were trustworthy and thus admissible.
No witness testified to that, right?
There was no records custodian that testified. However, the agent did testify as to how he obtained the documents, which was one of several factors that the district court used.
Right, and do you have a case specifically that supports that, that says because the agent served a subpoena and he received the documents from the entity to which the subpoena was served, that deals with the, that falls within the business record exception, that lays sufficient foundation?
No, Your Honor, and the district court judge here did not find that either. The district court judge found that
So don't you think that's a problem, a real problem?
The better practice would be to get a 90211 certification or get a records custodian.
Not the better practice.
The correct
practice.
There are right practices and wrong practices. The rules require the right practice.
Right.
Whether evidence is real, you ask the custodian of the evidence. You don't ask some federal agent. Perfectly straightforward.
Part of the problem here was the confusion, and if you look at the trial transcript and what the defendant's objection really was, there were 7 or 8 pages of trial transcript.
Entirely possible that the objection was confused or off the point. I mean, it looks like there was some confusion about the difference between admitting the underlying records and the propriety of summarizing them in the chart. But it all started when the assistant U.S. attorney didn't do the job right. And this is not rocket science. This ain't hard.
So you agree that the case law, I mean, the reason that you couldn't find a case saying the agent getting to was because there is no case, because you realize now that that is not appropriate, not only appropriate. The rules of evidence don't permit a foundation to be laid like that.
In order to find the underlying documents in this book.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Because you're never going to find a case like that, in my opinion, because that's just not the law.
Right. And I think this progressed in that direction because of the confusion initially and also because the government wasn't trying to admit the underlying documents, but they do need to be shown to be admissible. And
absolutely.
So shown to be admissible in order to be summarized. So the government has to have, the prosecutor has to have, everything that's necessary to get them admitted.
The only time you don't need to have the underlying documents admissible under the rules is if you've got an expert who then testifies that routinely that expert relies on documents that are not admissible. Then as long as that expert testifies to that, then you're golden. But you have to have somebody come in and say, these are the records we make and keep. We keep them in the regular course of ordinary business. They're made by people with knowledge.
Right.
And the agent doesn't cut it. All we're asking you is you recognize that now.
Yes.
Okay.
And what you were talking about is a qualified witness under 803.6. In any case, the more important factor here is that any error was harmless. The impact of the summaries on the jury was minimal. Although not irrelevant to the bribery charge, the summary
suggests that this should never have been put in the first place because it's all completely beside the point. I sometimes think assistant U.S. attorneys take it as a challenge to see if they can get slam dunk cases in a position where they might be reversed by overtrying them and taking silly risks.
Are you addressing the conspiracy charge then? In this case, it's the...
The defendant was caught red-handed paying the bribe.
and that evidence went to the bribery charge, along with the defendant's own statements to the police, Johnson's testimony, the fact that the defendant told police officers he expected approved drawings back in 2 to 4 weeks when a city plan examiner said it would take 6 to 12 months for these drawings specifically. And defendant's theory that the defendant thought Johnson was an expediter was certainly unfounded. The defendant paid cash to Johnson at a gas station at midnight, which is not the normal course of business, via check during the day at a business place. Johnson's name was not on any of the defendant's permit applications, and the agent did testify that at least 4 of the permit applications that the defendant had applied for his buildings did not list Johnson, but in fact listed other expediters.
So expediters have to be listed on these documents?
On the permit application.
Is that part of the rule or the practice in the city of Chicago that if you hire an expediter, you have to list that the expediter is working with you somewhere on some document? Is that a requirement by the city?
It's my understanding that on the permit applications, there's a space for the expediters, and there's also a space for a registration number for expediters. Mm-hmm. And the deputy commissioner for the Department of Buildings testified that expediters are supposed to register with the city, that they're required to, and they get that registration number. Johnson didn't do any of that. And as you stated, he was not standing in line at City Hall, the Department of Buildings, because he worked there. And there was no evidence whatsoever that he used had other people stand in line for him in an expediting business.
Was there any evidence? Is this a conflict for him to be working for the city and then serve as an expediter? Did any of that evidence come out? Or I'm just curious, following up on what Judge Kaney said.
As the deputy commissioner for the Department of Buildings stated that you cannot also be employed with the city and be an expediter. So that evidence did come out at the trial. There was also no testimony, very little testimony about DTA development, Johnson's side business. There were only a few mentions of it here and there in the transcript. In terms of the sentencing calculations, it was not clear error by the district court when finding by the preponderance of the evidence that the defendant's relevant conduct, including the acquitted conduct, should be considered. The judge did make findings that Johnson's testimony was credible in deciding that when Johnson testified that the defendant paid Johnson $4,000 to $5,000 for the computer changes, when Johnson testified that the defendant paid somebody else prior to Johnson for the same computer changes, Johnson also testified that he and the defendant decided that he would find someone to get the zoning stamps and get the approvals done, which he would do for $5,000 at a time. And that's when the defendant was caught at the gas station at midnight with the $12,000. So that was all corroborated by the defendant's post-arrest statements to the police, where he specifically said, I am paying him cash for the same type of stampings and approvals, and I've met with him numerous times over the past 2 to 3 years for the same type of expedited service, or same type of services. If there are no other questions, I ask that you affirm the conviction and sentence.
Well, I just want to get back for a minute to this. The records, just that, you know, I'm big in the checklist, and it seems to me that on evidence that is going to be introduced at trial, you know, a checklist can be used for that. You know, the witness, the exhibit number, the witness who's going to testify, the evidentiary rule that applies, so that, you know, as you go through the evidence in trying the case, if all those things are hit, then again, you don't have an issue up here in the Court of Appeals.
That's right, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Just a suggestion.
Thank you. I didn't have
a question.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Weinberg?
I'd like to respond. In terms of those records being the type that are trustworthy, I think that there was an issue at the trial when Agent Hodapp was on the witness stand regarding the fact that calls were coming in and going out simultaneously, meaning a call would come in at 10:15 and 40 seconds, and it would last for 40 seconds. But then at 10:15 and 43 seconds, there would be another call going out from the call that was supposed to be engaged in the incoming call. And when questioned on the witness stand regarding why those phone charts showed those overlapping calls, Agent Hodapp was unable to explain why that happened. So there was an issue regarding the trustworthiness of those records, and that would have been solved with a certification or with a records custodian who could have explained how they were generated.
That's the kind of thing that wouldn't be solved by a records custodian. Mm-hmm. The records custodian would say, our computer keeps these records. I can verify that our computer keeps these records, but I have no idea what it means or how the cell system works or anything like that.
But, well, a record custodian, if they would say that, they would certainly be able to say, I guess, that these records were generated in the same format at the same time at the time.
Describe what command was given to the computer and how it was generated. But what they mean is not part of the foundation of evidence.
And furthermore, where the government says that any error is harmless, you know, there are two versions of what was going on in the gas station. Either he was paying a bribe or he was paying an expediter. And the fact that those records that we don't feel should have been introduced at all show this relationship between these parties, we think that it was very prejudicial toward Mr. Oros.
I don't even know how it helps you distinguish those two possibilities. It just tells you they were in contact.
It does say they were in contact, and also that Mr. Johnson was in contact with other people at the Department of Buildings. Where the government says that Mr. Johnson wasn't listed as an expediter on these documents, there's no evidence that Mr. Oros either was listed on any of these documents. Mr. Oros was doing this for a company called Algin Construction, and their client was a man named Danny Erlo. So Mr. Oros is not the person who prepared those documents. He was simply facilitating this transaction. And if there's no other questions.
So he was off the books. I mean, he wasn't on the form either.
Right.
Okay.
There's no ordinance or regulation defining or addressing expediters?
Well, when the government stated that expediters have to be registered with the city, that is voluntary. That is not a law or an ordinance, as far as I know. That is a voluntary action by the expediters that the city of Chicago suggests, but there's no ordinance in place that requires that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Weinberg. The case is taken under advisement.